Hi, I'm Chase Bunker, but you're not here for me. You're here for my guest. He is a Christmas icon. He's a popular actor and director. You may know him for his role as Ralphie from A Christmas Story. You can see him at the Florida Theater on November 28th for an evening with Peter Billingsley. Tickets on sale now. He is Peter Billingsley. Peter, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. You?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for coming on. I'm glad we're able to talk again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Same here.
First off, one thing I didn't realize, you've literally been acting pretty much your entire life. You're doing commercials since you were two,
yeah.
And it all just came to go up. You know, we kept doing more from there. Were you able to have like a remotely normal childhood, or were you just kind of going from gig to gig?
I would say both. I mean, I was very blessed to, you know, it all started as sort of a random thing. My mom took my brother and myself to an agent thinking, oh, instead of just the normal activities for two-year-olds, maybe they could get like a little print ad or something for the scrapbook. And the first audition I ever went on was a commercial for Geritol. And I basically just stood there sort of as a prop, and I got the part. So for whatever reason, I guess I was just kind of good at this stuff. And if anything, you know, my parents were trying to slow it down to make sure that I had a normal life. I have two brothers, two sisters. We had dogs. I had chores. So, you know, especially the older I get, the more you really realize how tough it is to raise kids normally, especially in a Hollywood environment. So I'm really grateful that they really were able to strike that balance. But on the other end of it, I got to kind of travel the world and be part of a lot of really, really cool projects.
I feel like that's just a Geritol ad in of itself. It's like, I got my acting career thanks to these. Thanks, Geritol.
It's so true. I think it was a mom, and there was like four kids standing in frame, and she said, when you have kids like these, you should take Geritol twice a day. And I was a pretty rambunctious little guy. They had to really calm me down, I think. But somehow it all started at that one flash point. And then I did a ton of commercials, and then that starts going into, you know, TV and other things, and then eventually Christmas Story I did when I was 12.
When you see just the lives of other child actors and how it just, like, it leads to, like, drugs and just, like, chaos, do you ever just look at it and go, man, I dodged a massive bullet here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, fortunately, there's no good E-True Hollywood story on me. It would be very boring because I had quite a normal childhood. But you do really, you know, listen, I think you see that. It's all how it's handled, right? You see it with athletes, like kids that maybe really, really excel in sports. If there's too much pressure, too much put on the results of that child being really, really successful, you can feel that. For us, it was always something to do. If it wasn't fun, they said, let's stop. And it was a chance to have certain experiences that were different. And so, you know, it was always built on that concept that if it's something that you enjoy, then the family's willing to make some efforts in you being able to do that. And if it's not, then we'll stop. So they weren't trying to make money off me or, you know, any of the unfortunate other things that you see a lot of child stars go through. So, you know, again, I just had a very normal childhood other than kind of being on screen and having a certain level of fame with that.
How was it dealing with the fame as from a child's perspective? Just because, like, do you have like random adults just coming up to you in the street saying, hey, you're great in this and that? And you're just like, wait, whoa, why is this adult coming up to me?
Yeah, definitely. It took a while to get used to, but I think for me, it was good because it was sort of a slow burn of doing a lot of things. I didn't come out the gate early in one massive role that kind of changed my life overnight. So it slowly built, and, you know, it was cool in school. I didn't really go to school a lot. I was homeschooled a ton, so I had really a lot of tutors. So, you know, the times I was in school, it was fun to be around friends, but then I was back on the road. So it was nice. And, like, this is before social media, so fame was kind of a different thing. Like, when people recognize you from being on TV and film, it was kind of a big deal for them because they just saw you in their living room, you know, and didn't really have access to you in other ways. But it was a slow bleed. Even with Christmas Story, that film was not a hit when it first came out at all.
Yeah.
And that was maybe the biggest thing that I had. I had done some other movies that just didn't do very well. And even that was a very slow roll into being recognized. But still today, I guess I look kind of the same because I certainly get recognized a lot.
Yeah, you mentioned that it A Christmas Story wasn't initially a success. It kind of just came over time. When did you realize that this movie actually became a Christmas staple?
Yeah, it was. It was a little disappointing, I think, for everyone, because the filmmakers had worked so hard for so long to get the movie made. About 12 years it took them to get the movie made.
Oh, wow.
It came out, and it did fine. And this was really sort of before, it came out in 83, so it was really before the home video boom. You know, I think still people had Betamax and VHS players, and not everyone really had a home video system, but it was growing. And so it came to the theater, it went, and we sort of thought, all right, well, I guess that's it. Like, that was cool, but it wasn't some mega hit. And then people started, what I learned was handing VHS tapes around to each other. So the movie came out on VHS, and they would share it family to family and say, you've got to see this movie. And it started to build a cult following. And I remember I was in a video store. We were living in Phoenix at the time. And I was just there to rent a movie. It was probably 7 or 8 years later. And I came around the corner to get a video. And there was a cardboard cutout, a standee of me, huge, life-size, holding the Red Ryder BB gun in the cowboy outfit. And I marched up to the desk and I said, what the hell is this? And he said, oh, hey, you're that guy. I'm like, yeah, I know, but why is this here? It's like 9 years later. He's like, people keep asking for it. Every year we can't keep it on the shelves. And that's kind of when I started to realize that there was something more to this movie. And then shortly after that, they did the marathon on TBS. They're going to air it 24 straight hours. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is a terrible idea. And it was a major hit. And so it's just really, it's got such a great fan base, the movie, and they really kept the film alive. And without them, I think it would not be the film that it is now, because so many films, even good ones, you know, just if they don't quite catch that spark, it's just sort of done. And now it's just kept going and going, and it seems like it's just as big today as it was then.
That's got to be stunning to just go into a video store and just see this massive standee of you, which, by the way, like, the studio doesn't even contact you, it sounds like. So you just walk like a regular Blockbuster,
yeah, exactly.
And you just see, like,
totally.
Why is there a 12-foot version of me?
Bump into myself. Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of a surreal moment, but it really crystallized, like, gosh, if they're promoting a 9-year-old movie with taking up shelf space or floor space to this level, there's obviously something here. And, you know, as I said, after that TV marathon, now I think it's on 2 networks or 3 networks, and it just keeps going and going. So it, and my relationship grew with the film over time, which was cool because I liked the movie, but you're very close to it. And then as I got older and you don't necessarily see yourself in it as much, like you can be a little bit more objective with it. I can really see the value in it and kind of what fans think, because at first for me I was like, yeah, it's a pretty cool movie, but you know, I know how we did that, and that's a lot of what's been fun about this tour. And last year was the first time I really ever did it, and we're doing some more cities this year, is to be able to speak about the film and to give some insights, a lot of behind the scenes stories, what the expectations were of the movie, how they were broken, and kind of decode a lot of it for fans. So that's been really nice, because there are a lot of stories that just I didn't really have any reason to kind of talk about necessarily. So it's been fun for me to go back through memory lane, and I pulled a lot of old photos and I show those, and we break down some scenes and just give I think a lot more meat on the bone to the film for fans.
Obviously, in A Christmas Story, Ralphie always wanted a Red Ryder BB gun. Growing up, what was the best Christmas present you received? And also, what was the worst Christmas present you ever received?
Well, I was a little like Ralphie. You know, Ralphie's kind of a... Ralphie's relentless, and he's a dreamer, but he's also kind of a smartass a little bit. And he's a little bit of a liar. You know, he doesn't want to get caught. I was a little bit of that guy, too. So one year I did get a lump of coal in my stocking.
Oh, no.
for real. Now, I think it was more my parents attempting to try to discipline me. But fortunately, just as I was, you know, near tears, they did bring out some other presents and some other elements for the stockings, but they wanted that moment of shock, which I think worked. So that was probably the worst. I don't know if there's any worse Christmas gift than that. But the best, I was obsessed with metal detecting, and I wanted a metal detector, and I got one. And I was pretty obsessed that and convinced I would find some buried treasure. a lot of rusty nails and bottle caps later, I decided to go back to work.
Man, I thought I might have had you beat with neon rollerblading Ken, but Cole, legitimate Cole.
It's legitimate, dude. It's like, it's the real deal. Now, again, I'm not paying my parents negatively. I think they wanted me to have that moment of like, hey, come on. I was like, all right. And then the presents actually came out.
There's
but it was kind of a laughable moment. Yeah, there's, I think if that's the worst of it, I don't know that can sustain a full hour.
Theirs was a dark moment in his life when, come Christmas morning, he found worse than fluffy bunny pajamas, it was a lump of coal. And you just like go to this black and white photo now of like just you angry.
Holding up a lump of coal.
What was the best thing you found with that metal detector?
I would find a lot of silver dimes that were like bright silver when you pull them up, like mm-hmm. a mercury dime. There's nothing really worth anything now.
Oh.
And then I found some coin from the Fork and Knife Club, which was like a Chamber of Commerce club in California.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing great. I mean, I wish. I see the guys now, like, you know, on the beach finding rings and stuff, but I was not so lucky.
Not only are you an actor, you also do a lot of producing work. You do directing work, which, by the way, you directed Couples Retreat, I think is criminally underrated. I think it's a fantastic movie. I just want to throw that fact out there.
Thank you.
We just had one of my other anchors just shouted that she loves that movie. You've mentioned production work. What exactly does a producer do?
This is the age-old question, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess senior management. I mean, there's lots of different types, but really the producing that I do is kind of from soup to nuts. So starting, so we're either finding the script, we're hiring a writer to write it. So we're generating the material on the front end, overseeing it through filming, overseeing it through post-production, and then overseeing it through marketing. And then and then when the film actually comes out. So you're, a lot of the time hiring the director, you're putting together cast lists, you're managing the creative, and then it's a lot of logistics on set. But generally, that's kind of what it is. And I tend to only do things that I'm really passionate about and really want to go from soup to nuts, because it's a long process. It's time away. It's a lot of thought and a lot of effort. And so I think you really have to believe in what you're doing to do it. I'm not really in the volume business of just trying to get multiple projects on the board.
You can see him at the Florida Theater on November 28th for an evening with Peter Billingsley. Tickets on sale now. Peter, I know you're on set right now in an undisclosed location. You would not tell me what it is, but I'm willing to report exclusively. You're at Area 51. I'm going to report that exclusively.
That's right.
But before I let you go, I want to ask you the same 10 questions I ask all my guests here. Are you ready?
Okay. Yes, ready.
They're inspired by the late, great James Lipton. Most played song on your playlist?
Right now, Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jacks.
Guilty pleasure band.
Not guilty, but a favorite, Social Distortion.
Oh, that's a good, I don't say it's guilty either. Yeah, they're so good.
They're so good.
Favorite song you like to belt it out to, no matter how good or how bad you sound?
You Gotta Fight for Your Right to Party.
Great answer. If you could eat one meal for a week, what is it?
Steak.
Drink of choice?
Water.
Favorite superhero?
Iron Man.
To help settle a bet, do you think Mega Man is a superhero?
No.
How dare you?
Sorry, you lost.
Favorite internet video?
Specifically one, you mean?
It could be any internet video.
I'm really hooked on spearfishing right now.
Ooh. And finally, Peter Billingsley, give me your spiciest hot take. It could be about anything in life.
As a parent, it's not what you say to your kids. It's what you do that matters.
Great answer. You can see him at the Florida Theater November 28th, an evening with Peter Billingsley. Tickets on sale now. Peter, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.